And welcome to the very first installment of the Fitz on Fantasy podcast. I am delighted that you're giving me some of your valuable time, and I will do my level best to make it worth your while. I'm your host, Pat Fitzmaurice. I write fantasy football articles and do fantasy football player rankings for thefootballgirl.com. And I've also written for 4for4.com and si.com, the website for Sports Illustrated. You can find me on Twitter at Fitz_FF. And I hope you will bookmark thefootballgirl.com and also follow my colleague there, Melissa Jacobs, who runs the site. Her Twitter handle is @thefootballgirl. Just a little bit about my background. I've been writing for fantasy football publications for quite a while. I started back in the late 1990s when I was an editor for a publication called Pro Football Weekly, and that was in the early days of the fantasy football media. The internet was in its early days, for that matter, and I was like one of the early pilots trying to fly a wooden airplane, but now it's the modern era, the jet, and we're fully immersed in fantasy football podcasts now, which are all over the place. I missed doing one. 2 years ago, I co-hosted one with Michael Beller of Sports Illustrated, but I did not have a regular show last year and was starting to get the itch to be heard again. So here we are, and I have a great guest this week. My debut guest is John Paulson of 4for4.com. If you follow fantasy football closely, if you have multiple teams, this is a guy you probably already know, but if you don't, you need to know, because he is one of the foremost rankers in the business. He kills it year after year in the Fantasy Pros accuracy competition, and you are going to want to hear what he has to say about some players going into the 2018 season. So, in addition to being blessed by a great first guest, I am blessed to have obtained the services of a world-class podcast producer, and he really is world-class. He's not based in the United States or even in North America. He's a man of the world. He is Calm Kelly, and you're probably familiar with him if you listen to a lot of podcasts, because he is the assistant executive producer of RotoViz Radio, does quite a few podcasts for them with both hosting duties, producing duties, and in the past he has hosted the Overtime Ireland podcast, which I have guested on a couple of times and was an excellent podcast. Calm, how are you, my friend?
How you doing, Pat? Very excited to be part of this team. And I like the way you said world class, and then I tried to figure out, does that mean world class because I'm not in America, I'm in a different part of the world, or does it mean that I'm at a certain standard that is quite good? So I don't know if world class, I think that's too high for me, but I'll take it. Anytime I get a compliment like that, it's I'll put that one in my back pocket and keep that. I might save this recording for everyone to listen to.
Well, it's like soccer, Calm. You're world class in the soccer sense. Like, you can't just be limited to the Irish leagues. Like, your services are up for sale. You've got, all the top clubs, Arsenal, Roma, they're all bidding on you. Like, everyone wants to get your services. You just can't be limited to the Irish leagues.
Yeah, and you'll know this, Pat, from getting my services on this show. I always go to the highest bidder, isn't that correct?
That's right. We're not going to disclose exactly what the terms of our deal were, but let's say we open the purse strings.
But that's what you have to do when you have something like this going on, Pat. It's such an exciting podcast that you've got going on here, and it's going to be something that I think that's just going to grow and grow, and I'm excited to see where it goes. The listeners probably can hear it in my voice. It's just an opportunity I jumped at to be part of it. I've had you on my show before, and just to see the opportunity here, to see what guests we've linked up with to come on, and what's going to come as the season progresses. It's going to be a fun time, and I think it's important for all those listeners to hit that subscribe button, because each and every week on the Pat Fitzmaurice podcast here with Fitz on Fantasy, you're going to learn things that are going to help you on your way to winning a championship this year. It's the small things that make the big difference, from the waiver wire to those trade offers that you send out. So Pat's going to have you all covered, and I'm glad to be part of the journey here at the Fitz on Fantasy podcast.
Well, thanks, Calm. I'm really honored to be, have your services steering the ship while I'm, doing the meet and greet with the passengers. You're doing the hard work steering and in the boiler room providing fuel for the engines. Calm, you mentioned the guests, so without further ado, let's get to our guest this week, John Paulson of 4for4.com. I'm extremely fortunate to have Mr. John Paulson of 4for4.com as my first guest. If you're an avid fantasy football enthusiast, chances are you know who John is. He is an exceptional ranker of players. FantasyPros.com has been tracking John's rankings for 8 years, and in those 8 years, he has twice won the accuracy competition against other experts, and he's finished in the top six in 7 of those 8 years. For my money, John and Sean Kerner are the two best rankers in the business. But John isn't just a great ranker, he's an excellent writer. He co-hosts the terrific weekly podcast at 4for4, and he's a commanding presence on Twitter, where his handle is at 4for4_John. I'm proud to call John a friend, and I always enjoy our DM exchanges during the football season regarding the team we both love, the Green Bay Packers. John, welcome aboard.
Pat, thanks for having me. I'm honored to be your first guest on this podcast, and I hope I make it a good appearance because I'm sometimes known to be a little dry on the podcast, but I'll do my best to liven it up today on Father's Day.
Oh, not at all. You are not a bit dry. You're like a nice moist brownie, John. So, yeah, we'll get into fantasy football in just a minute, but first I want to bring up two interesting little biographical tidbits about you, all right? The first is that you hail from the same hometown as a slightly less famous, slightly less successful football personality. You're from Pewaukee, Wisconsin, hometown of J.J. Watt. Is that correct?
That's correct. My mailing address at my mom's house is Pewaukee. She lives on Pewaukee Lake. I actually went to Kettle Moraine High School. I believe J.J. went to Pewaukee High School. So we wouldn't have run in the same circles if I were 10 or 15 years younger. But, you know, very close in terms of miles away. You know, we go to Pewaukee all the time for different events and stuff. So it's a very close, small town nearby. And it's all part of that Lake Country area in Waukesha County.
But because you're a wise man, you no longer spend your winters in frigid Wisconsin. And now you make your home in sunny Southern California.
Yes, that's correct. I came out here as a part of my basketball career at college, and we came to San Diego a couple times, and it was the middle of winter, and it was 73, 74 degrees. There were girls in bikinis, so I knew that, you know, in December in San Diego was pretty great, so I was going to try to make my way out here eventually, and I did.
Very nice. And speaking of basketball, that's what I wanted to get into is the other biographical tidbit. Some people might not know that you were a college basketball player. So you're a fairly tall gentleman. How tall exactly, John?
I'm 6'8".
And now even the people who follow you for a long time might not know that you played for a famous coach. John played for Bo Ryan, who built Wisconsin into a perennial Big Ten contender and an annual threat in the NCAA tournament. Before Bo went to Madison, he built a dynasty at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, where he won 4 Division III national championships in the 90s. How many of those championships were you part of, John? And could you talk a little bit about your college career and what it was like to play for Bo?
Yeah, I was just part of one. My senior year of high school, he won his first one with the 1991 national championship team. I came in 91, 92. And then we won in 94, 95. We went 31-0. I was not the star of the team, but I did start. So I was fourth or fifth, you know, in scoring and all that. And I was a junior that year. And we played Steve Alford's team when he was at Manchester, Indiana. And they were also undefeated. And at that point, it was the only time that two undefeated teams had played off in a national championship in basketball in the history of the NCAA, I believe. So it was quite the scene in Buffalo in April. It was snow on the ground, of course, and wasn't, you know, we tried to party after we won, but it was, you know, it's Buffalo, so it was a little tough.
So what was your relationship with Bo like?
I would say it was tumultuous. I pretty much, I took some time and spent some time in his doghouse, probably for the first 3 or 4 years. It took me a while to figure him out and for him to figure me out. I had to sort of he's kind of I don't know if anybody knows Bo, but he's, as far as coaching, he's kind of a hard ass, and I hadn't really dealt with that growing up at all. My coaches were all probably too nice to me. And getting to Platteville was kind of a wake-up call, so I didn't deal with it real well. And really until my junior year did I start playing well. And I think my senior year is probably my best year because I just kind of said I don't really care anymore and about what he says. I'm just going to go play my game. And he kind of stopped. I think once you get to with Bo, once you get through those, you know, your junior season – he kind of lets you be as a senior. He doesn't do a whole lot of riding you, which is, it gets really, you know, it can get really tiresome and wear on you as a player. But I certainly learned a ton from him about basketball, about winning, about how to be a man in general. It wasn't always fun, and some of them were tough lessons, but he did teach me a lot. And I learned so much more in those 4 or 5 years under him than I did even in the previous 18 years playing basketball, growing up in rec leagues and playing club ball and all that.
Now, Bo had an assistant coach who has since come to prominence on his own, and you have sort of an interesting backstory with him, do you not?
Yes, Greg Gard. He joined our program at Platteville my junior year, so the year that we won the title, I believe. I might be getting my years wrong there, but he was fresh out of college, or he was still in college, and he joined the staff as like a, you know, the fourth or fifth assistant coach, and it took him a while to kind of settle in and to get the respect of all the players, because everybody was like, who's this young guy coming in trying to tell me how to square up or whatever, you know? So I think it took, about 4 or 5 years before he really, settled in. And once he was a fixture of the program, then I think he started getting the respect of the players and everything. So it was nice to see him get a chance to be the head coach there at Madison. He's a good guy. We actually played in a fantasy football league during my career there. I guess it was my junior or senior year. And all I remember from that was that it was an auction league. We could start 3 running backs, and I ended up going mid-level with my prices and getting a lot of pretty good players. Like, I got Robert Smith from the Vikings, so that kind of dates when this draft took place, because Robert Smith had a great year that year, and I think I won the league, but I can't attest to that. I can't vouch for that.
And what kind of fantasy football coach is Greg Gard?
I don't really remember. So let's say he's a better basketball coach than fantasy football coach. He's probably okay. I don't know.
Very diplomatic, John. Nice. So I mentioned earlier what a fine ranker you are. And in fact, as an indication of my reverence for you as a ranker, when I have lineup dilemmas of my own during the season, I always check your rankings to see how you have those players slotted for the week. So I hope you take that as a compliment. But I'm very curious about your setup for doing rankings each week. On Twitter, when you're unveiling your rankings for the week, you often say that you've emerged from the rankings cave. I need to know about the cave, John. What room of the house are we talking about? Are there candles? Is there new age music playing in the background? Tell me about the cave.
Well, it's more of a like a metaphorical cave. It's not so much of a actual cave that I'm in, or a room that's just designated to be my office. My desk is in our kitchen / TV room. My desk looks out over our backyard, so I see all the hummingbirds and the flowers blooming and everything. So it's not so cave-ish. It's more of a mental cave, I guess. I have to kind of put my nose down, it's very numerical oriented. So it has a lot to do with the distributions for each team, the getting the team stats together, and then splitting that all up by the players, and then getting the rankings organized. And it's usually a, start to finish type process. That's all I work on for a day and a half or so. And then usually by Tuesday, I metaphorically emerge bleary-eyed from the rankings cave and release the rankings for the week. So that's kind of how that works.
So do you listen to music while you're doing it? I know you're a big music guy.
Yes, I do. I don't have any problem. People ask sometimes, a lot of people have trouble writing or doing anything really intense with rock music playing or whatever. And I have no problem with that. As long as it's not like metal or something like that, I can usually listen to it. One thing I do a little bit differently with the music is that I have a playlist where I'm listening to new stuff and deciding if I want to keep it on a different playlist, whatever. I usually don't listen to that playlist because I don't want to be focusing so much on the music. So I usually play some other kind of playlist that I've already deemed the songs all worthy of my time, and listen to that instead, because that'll keep me chugging along with the work.
Nice. Now, Fantasy Pros, your success is so established over that, and you've consistently fared well. So now that you've got this track record and this reputation, do you get nervous before like the weekly accuracy results come out?
Yeah, I would say that I want to do well. It's one of our hallmarks of 4 for 4 is that we provide good draft rankings and in-season rankings year after year, so people can sign up knowing that they're going to get pretty accurate rankings on a weekly basis and also to draft from. So it is important to me to do well. I want to do well in it. It's something I work towards, and I try to figure out how to do better. It's one of those deals where continual improvement is sort of the basis of my degree in industrial engineering in college was, continual improvement and trying to figure out where there are flaws in the program and fix those to make things more efficient. So it's definitely part of my process as a ranker as well.
Are you normally able to tell whether you've had a good or bad week? Like, do you have a pretty good idea? Are you ever kind of surprised by how the result turned out?
Occasionally, I'm surprised by how the result turns out. I typically know going in to a week or when kickoff happens if I'm high or low on certain players, and I can kind of keep a tally based on how those players are doing relative to the other players that I rank, and I can kind of have a pretty good sense if it was a disaster for a week or if it was a pretty good week. I do think that the new system that they have at Fantasy Pros isn't necessarily as good as the old one that they had. Right now, I think that there's just too much onus placed on the players that are the high scorers for the week. So you really have to nail your top five, top 10 at each position. It really doesn't matter a whole lot if you pick somebody to finish. Let's say you rank somebody 30 spots high at wide receiver and he finishes 25th instead of 55th where everybody else had him. That doesn't help you a whole lot in the accuracy ranking. So some of these sleeper picks, don't matter as much as maybe they used to. And you really just have to have the first 5 or 10 guys nailed pretty well to have a good accuracy week.
Let's get right into rankings for 2018. One guy in the news now is Andrew Luck, and you were understandably conservative with him when you unveiled your first set of rankings because he hadn't thrown at that point. You had him quarterback 22. Now that he's throwing again, are you going to move him up? And if so, roughly how high? What neighborhood do you think he's going to be in now?
Yeah, I think when I first was projecting him, I was assuming he was going to miss 3 or 4 games, and that kind of put him at the low end of the QB2 rankings. If you start to look at his per game average based on that estimation, maybe 12.5 games, and he should be up in the top 10. So I'm going to keep an eye on the shoulder. It's not enough for me that he started to throw. I want to see him have sustained throwing. And then if that's the case and everything looks good, then we'll start to move him up. And obviously if he's fully healthy and he plays 16 games, he's probably a top 5 or 6 fantasy quarterback, maybe top 8, depending. I think the shoulder is a concern, the durability is a concern, and those are all concerns that I have. And quarterback's so deep, it's hard to take a risk like that. But right now he's pretty cheap. And I think in best ball it's a little tougher. I would rather take him in a simple redraft league, and knowing that you can get out of him, cut him if you had to, and just stream the position. In best ball, you're sort of locked in with him, and if he has another injury or only plays 4 games, then you're kind of stuck with the numbers he's providing you. But certainly he's a guy I'm monitoring very closely in the next couple of 3 weeks, and just to see how things are going, because he makes that offense run.
What about T.Y. Hilton? It seems like you're not really hedging on him. You've got him ranked squarely in wide receiver 1 territory. So if all systems are go for Luck, are you actually, and it looks like Luck is going to be ready for week 1, no problems with the shoulder. I mean, are you going to move Hilton even higher, into the top 8 or 9 or so? Do you think he's going to be, are you confident in him, even if Luck is somewhat iffy going into the start of the season, and you think Hilton's still going to return wide receiver 1 value?
Yeah, I mean, this is based on Luck playing 12 or 13 games, so I think he'll be out there most of it, and that puts Hilton at 10 for me in standard. If Luck plays 16 games, then I think Hilton has top 5, top 7 upside. I probably would move him up a couple spots, in the Devontae Adams, Keenan Allen type territory, if I knew Luck was going to play a full season. But obviously there's a lot of downside with that, because if Luck doesn't play, then you got Jacoby Brissett and whoever else throwing him the ball, and that's just not as good. So I put him right at 10 now, because I think there's upside there with Luck, and then those next guys like Doug Baldwin and Mike Evans and Adam Thielen and Tyreek Hill, they're all fine and everything, but I do have quite a bit of confidence. I mean, I like Hilton a lot when Luck is playing and healthy. I mean, he's a very good receiver.
Let's talk running backs for a minute. I thought that maybe we could each quickly run through our top 10 and see if there are any points of disagreement. Why don't you go first?
All right. So in standard formats, I have Todd Gurley at number 1, Le'Veon Bell at 2, Ezekiel Elliott at 3, David Johnson at 4, Alvin Kamara at 5. Not sure. It seems pretty much like the consensus or near it for the top 5. And then Kareem Hunt, I like Dalvin Cook a lot at 7, Melvin Gordon at 8, Saquon Barkley at 9, and Leonard Fournette at 10. What about you?
Wow, we're actually pretty close to identical. The only key difference is that we've got the first four in the exact same order: Gurley, Bell, Elliott, David Johnson. I've actually got Barkley 5th, then Kamara, Hunt, Gordon, Cook, and Fournette. So are you a little, is it just the rookie conservatism that you're, you know, hedging a bit, not quite sure how the athleticism is going to translate to the pro level? Is it more the Giants offense you're worried about? Is it the possibility that Jonathan Stewart and Wayne Gallman could possibly chip into his workload? Not that you're completely fading him as the 9th overall running back, but you know, I'm ranking him pretty aggressively, and I know some others have him like in the top 6. So why are you holding back just a little bit?
And I wouldn't say I'm down on him at all. I mean, if I look at my PPR rankings, I mean, I'm projecting him for 65 catches. So that puts Barkley at number 6 after Elliott, Kamara, Johnson, Bell, and Gurley. I think he's going to be a big part of the passing game. I wonder if the Giants are going to be able to run the ball as much as they would like to, or what he needs for them to, for a top 5, top 6, top 7 finish for him in standard formats. So that's sort of where I'm at with him. I do think he's part of that group where you have a big drop off at running back, and I would say it, you know, at the top 13, top 14, depending on the format, because I think you add McCaffrey to the PPR group, RB1, RB2 type PPR running backs with McCaffrey because he's got so many catches. But, you know, there's a big drop off after those 10 that we mentioned: Freeman, McCoy, and then for me, Jerick McKinnon. You know, Barkley's definitely part of that. So the owners can get one of those guys if they want. They might be able to get 2. Then I think you're dropping in seriously in terms of what sort of sustained workload and guaranteed workload you can get out of these guys that are going in the RB2 ranks, like Jordan Howard. Is he going to get enough play in the passing game? Alex Collins, is he still the RB1 in Baltimore? We think he is, but is he really? Joe Mixon, who got most of the work last year, but it was a really bad offensive line. Lamar Miller. So you can kind of see that you get these guys that are not quite as solid as these top 12 to 14 players that we're talking about. But I think Barkley is definitely super safe. I pulled some stats. I don't have them on hand, but the amount of work that running backs that go in the top 10 that get in their rookie seasons, it's pretty incredible. So he should deliver RB1 numbers.
So is that going to affect your draft strategy, what you said about this drop off? I mean, do you think it's pretty imperative to pound running back at least one in the first round? And I guess because of that, with Antonio Brown being the pretty clear consensus number one wide receiver, at what point in the running back hierarchy are you willing to consider jumping in with Antonio Brown in the first round?
You know, that's a good question. I do think that it's important with the first 2 rounds to get one of these guys. You might be able to get one at the very early, you know, very start of the 3rd round, but I'm seeing McKinnon going in the late 2nd round as well. You might get a little bit of, I'm looking at Mixon here at 24, Jordan Howard at 26. So these are for me very fringe or high end RB2s, but they're just a big drop off to me for those guys versus Devonta Freeman, McKinnon, LeSean McCoy in terms of guaranteed workload and production. So I think it's important to get one. And then if you want to get 2, if you're not in love with the wide receivers there in the 2nd round, maybe grab 2. Browns just offers a lot of safety. I think Alvin Kamara is a pretty great pick in PPR formats as well, with Mark Ingram out the first 4 weeks. But you really can't go wrong with Barkley or Hopkins or Kareem Hunt or any of these guys. Like, when people ask me for a bust in the first round, I'm usually hard pressed to come up with somebody, because they're all going in the first round for a reason.
Yeah. What about standard? That's like in a standard league, that's kind of tricky thing to figure out where Antonio Brown is going to break in, right? Cause you don't want to get sniped on that entire first tier of running backs or.
Yeah. Cause they're probably going to go, by the middle of the first round. So you kind of have to know your people you're drafting against, because in standard, running backs hold more value than they do in PPR or half PPR. So I probably would bump him down a few spots and take Kamara and you know, maybe a Barkley and a Dalvin Cook ahead of him, just due to the guaranteed workload of those guys.
So since we're both avid Packer fans, John, let's chat about the team from a fantasy perspective for a minute. As of now, this is one of the murkiest running back situations in the league. Got Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, Ty Montgomery. They're all going to be in the mix, but it's kind of unclear how they're going to be deployed exactly. So what are we to make of the Green Bay backfield, John? How are you ranking these three guys for the time being? And are any of them recommended buys for you? Or are you inclined to just stay away due to the uncertainty?
Well, it's a complete mess. We have no idea what's going on with them. I think the way that the... Well, it depends on the ADP and where these guys are going in terms of in your draft. Like, you know, I know Aaron Jones typically is the first one off the board. He's been going pick 83. So I think for that reason, Jamal Williams is the better value because Williams has at least a 50-50 chance of being the RB1 there. I think Jones is the better player, though. Definitely the better runner. Williams is probably a little more... a little better in the passing game in terms of the pass blocking and all that. So I think we're going to end up seeing a three-headed backfield where guys are coming in and out of the game quite a bit, unless there's an injury, and then they'll go to one guy or two guys. So right now I'm thinking about Williams or Jones as an RB4, maybe an RB5, depending on where I'm at in my draft. But you know, you're talking pick 82, and you're looking at the seventh round. So that's a kind of a steep price to pay for somebody you're not even sure is going to start.
Gun to your head, which of those two do you like more, Jones or Williams?
Well, I mean, gun to my head, if I have to pick one of the two, and it's the same draft capital, I think Jones is better. I could totally see McCarthy running Williams out there quite a bit because he can pass block.
Right. I mean, it just seems like a silly reason to leave the more explosive guy on the shelf, or you know, to give him a minority share of the carries there. And speaking of that, how do you think Ty factors in? Do you think he is going to be a minority guy in this backfield for sure, or do you think his pass catching skills potentially give him like a leg up on, you know, third down duty and obvious passing downs?
Yeah, I mean, I could even see a scenario where Jones ends up carrying the ball first and second down, and Ty Montgomery is the third down back because he's a good, really good receiver and can pass block pretty well and stays healthy. Williams is the odd man out. You know, they've even talked about moving him back to receiver. I don't know if that's more of a here's a rumor mill type of a deal or if that's actually the case because he's bulked up a bit and now looks more like a running back than he does a receiver outside of the number that he wears on his jersey. So this really could, you know, it probably will end up being a two-man backfield one way or the other, either via injury or via two players out playing the third.
So I don't think we need to spend much time talking about Aaron Rodgers since we know what he's going to do if he stays healthy. But I'm more curious to get your take on the pass catchers. The Packers released Jordy Nelson in the offseason. They signed Jimmy Graham to be the starting tight end. They added three wide receivers in the latter part of the draft. How do you feel about Graham? So you have him ranked tight end 5, I believe, in your standard rankings. I assume you're not too spooked by the fact that he averaged 9.1 yards per catch last year.
Well, I think this is a better offense than what he was dealing with in Seattle. And I think he's going to basically replace Jordy in the red zone for the Packers. So there's plenty of work for him. They committed some money to him. I think he's going to be a big part of the offense. And we're just, you know, we're all looking at this offense now with Nelson gone, and there's just a lot to go around for everybody else. Davante Adams is ranked high. I think Randall Cobb's a fantastic value this year, and I think Jimmy Graham will be pretty good at tight end. And you're looking at a position that is really top heavy with, you know, Gronkowski, Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz. I really liked Hunter Henry prior to his injury. And then you got a bunch of guys that could finish anywhere from third or fourth to 16th or 18th, you know, going down the tight end ranking. So I think Jimmy Graham's a pretty safe bet given the quarterback he's playing with, his overall talent. And, you know, I looked up some of his game speed data and he still has some ability to get down the field. So I think the Packers will use him that way as well.
Yeah, I mean, it just the idea that he's washed because of his yards per catch last year, it just seems like, especially since the previous season, his yardage per catch was fine, and that was the year coming off the patellar tendon injury. Yeah, I mean, the Packers should be in scoring position quite a bit. There's double-digit touchdown upside again. The target should be there. I'm totally with you on him. I think it's all systems go for him this year. Let's briefly touch on the receivers, and we can kind of go rapid fire on these guys. I think Davante Adams is pretty clearly a consensus wide receiver one for most people. Should anyone be bothered by the fact that he hasn't had a 1,000-yard season yet?
No, I mean, he's also got double-digit touchdown upside, and he's been fantastic when anybody's been injured or out of the lineup. So I think Adams is a pretty safe pick there in the second, third round.
What about Randall Cobb? The last 2 years have been pretty choppy for him, but it seems like he should get a lot of targets this year just because of the way the wideout picture is for Green Bay. So is he a strong buy for you this year?
He's a strong buy for me. I like the value where he's going in drafts. His last 21 games, I pulled those numbers. I don't have them on hand again, but fantastic with Rodgers. I believe they're wide receiver two type numbers in both PPR and standard formats. With Rodgers under center, Cobb has just been kind of bitten by the injury bug lately. But he's only 27 years old, still has a lot of football in front of him. And with Jordy gone, I think he steps in and gets a significantly more targets this year.
What about the other guys? I know some people like Geronimo Allison as a sleeper, but nothing about his college career at the University of Illinois really suggested that he had an NFL future. If you look at his athletic measurables on playerprofile.com, they're pretty unimpressive. So would you be willing to spend a late round pick on him or not really?
I was thinking about it until the Packers drafted three receivers, Jermon Moore, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and Equanimeous St. Brown.
Nicely done.
Thank you. I think that was all right. I think obviously they're trying to shore up the position with Jordy Nelson gone. I think Geronimo probably has the inside track on the wide receiver three job, but clearly they want some production out of these guys. And what I'm hearing is that Jermon Moore, they're counting on Jermon Moore a little bit. They put his locker, I think, between Davante Adams and Randall Cobb's locker. I don't know did you hear that rumor or that report?
No, interesting. I hadn't seen that.
I don't know if that was actually factual, but it sounded good. So it seems like they're trying to ramp him up and get him into that spot. He was the first of those three receivers that the Packers took. So they obviously value him the highest. So it's interesting to see in terms of the training camp, this wide receiver three battle for the Packers, because it does tend to have fantasy value, although this year's a little bit different because we've got a stud tight end in there, Jimmy Graham, that's going to be fed the ball as well. So it might end up being Adams, Cobb, and Jimmy Graham is really the only three fantasy relevant receivers there for the Packers.
Yeah, you think there's like any chance that one of the guys beyond Moore, Scantling, or St. Brown, do you think? Obviously, one of these guys probably isn't making the roster. At least one of them isn't going to make the roster. But Brown was pretty... He's an interesting prospect just because of his athleticism and, potential upside. I know a lot of analysts kind of liked him going into the draft, but then he really slipped. Do you think he has any chance to hit whatsoever, or is that not a bet you'd be willing to make in an MFL, the last round of an MFL 10?
I don't think either one player is worth drafting right now, given the current situation of this depth chart and sort of how things went on draft day. It seems to me that Moore has the inside track of the three receivers to be the wide receiver three. And then even if he does win that job, I'm not sure he has starter type value. So
yeah.
I wouldn't be rolling the dice on Scantling or St. Brown in MFL 10s right now.
I agree with you on that. John, I'll let you go. Thank you so much for being my first guest. When I started hatching the idea for a podcast, I knew right away that I wanted you to be my very first guest on here. So, hopefully I didn't completely suck as a host and make this sound too much like the Chris Farley show. So before you run, is there anything you want to add and anything that's going on at 4for4? And can you maybe give our listeners your Twitter handle again?
Yeah, it's 4for4, number 4, F-O-R, number 4, underscore John on Twitter. And, right now, 4for4.com, we have early bird pricing on our classic pro and DFS subs. So there's a discount pricing. It's lowest pricing of the year right now. And if you do sign up, you're automatically entered into a drawing to win one of 30 championship belts or championship rings with our partner. And I'm blanking on the name of our partner. If you do sign up, that's good for all current and future subscribers all the way through the end of June. So hop on that and get your subscription to 4for4.
Yeah, 4for4 is just an invaluable tool. I used to do the weekly waiver wire watch along with John for like 3 years. And luckily, they have, even though I stopped doing it, they have not pulled my complimentary subscription yet. So I still use all the awesome tools and, you know, just Snap Tracker, Target Tracker, John's Rankings. There is a lot of good stuff on there also for DFS players. So I would highly recommend getting a sub to it. And John, thanks again. Great to have you on. And that is a wrap, everyone. I just want to thank you all once more for listening to Fits on Fantasy. I'm very honored that you were willing to come along for the maiden voyage. I'll be back again next week with another great guest. And believe me, this is a pretty special guest, so I think you'll want to come back for this one. I'll just leave you with one little hint. He's a popular guy in general, but this guest is especially popular this time of year. So I'll let you chew on that one for a little while. Thanks again, everyone. Be good to each other. I got it.